Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is Lord Victor Adebowale. A crossbench peer, he spends his time in the Palace of Westminster among the great and the good of the land, discussing matters of legislation and state, in sharp contrast to his working life outside the chamber. That's been spent among the disadvantaged and addicted, the people so often labelled hopeless cases. He wasn't quite a hopeless case himself when he started out, but failing all his A-levels and becoming a road sweeper gives us something of a flavour of his early years. He says of his prominent position in public life, "I'm a 6-foot black guy from Wakefield who isn't rich, didn't go to Eton or Oxbridge, isn't a lawyer. What the hell am I doing here?" So, Victor Adebowale, is that what other people think, do you think? Or sometimes when you're sitting on those red leather benches among the lords, spiritual and temporal, is that what they think?
I don't think they all think that. Some of them might do. I mean, the 700 peers, I'm sure that statistically there must be some of them thinking, what's he doing here? But then I'm probably thinking the same thing about them as well, so that's fair enough.
Is there another one with dreadlocks, or is that just you?
No, there are quite a few with long hair. But not dreadlocks. You know, I'm nearly 50. I'm just growing it because I've got it, you know.
Yeah, you suit it. You were one of the... It was 2001 when you were appointed as one of the... They became known as the People's Peers. It was this sort of revolution in the Lords. You don't like that title, really, the People's Peers.
No, it's meaningless. It's spin, isn't it? I'm a crossbench peer who happened to get there by an unusual route. I had an interview, like a job interview, and I got the job.
What did they ask you at the job interview?
Ooh... They asked me about legislation and how I think I would use my position in the Lords, and they asked me about my work at Centrepoint, because I was just leaving Centrepoint then, about myself. Yeah, they're kind of testing my sense of public service, I guess, knowledge, commitment, understanding.
And just to be clear, Centrepoint, of course, is the organisation that you led for many years that helps young homeless people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And before that, I'd been at Alcohol Recovery Project. And they were all campaigning jobs that put you, to some degree, in the public eye. And I suppose they thought, he's got a big gob, might as well do something with it.
And on the day that you were, do they call it being sworn in?
Yeah.
You had, I imagine, the ermine robes. Was your mum with
false
you?
False fur. Not the real thing. I hired mine. Well, there's a lot of people there who I loved and still love. My mum.
What did your mum say?
She didn't say a lot, to be honest. You know, I think that she probably thought, he's employed.
What, do you actually worried up until then that you didn't have a real job?
I think she thought, you know, son, you've done all right. You know, you've done okay.
Time to kick the music off then. Tell me about the first disc today.
It's Stevie Wonder, Living for the City.
And you've chosen this, why, Victor?
Well, because Stevie Wonder is iconic. If you want to hear just talent, creativity and a connection with an understanding of how the world works for a black guy who isn't privileged, then Stevie Wonder's your man. You know, this guy campaigned for years to get a day off to celebrate the birthday of Martin Luther King and succeeded. So how could I not have him in 8 records? You know, it's Stevie Wonder, Living for the City. It's got to be.
That was Stevie Wonder and Living for the City. So tell me, Victor Adebowale, where were the seeds of your social awareness sown?
Mine were, I guess, growing up in Wakefield, being one of a few black families in Wakefield. But actually, it's not really that either. It's just, I remember having the balloon debate with myself about what I was going to do.
Right.
And I thought that there are very few things that really, really matter. Housing, clothing, you know, Maslow's hierarchies, I guess. And I wanted to do something that I felt mattered.
Right, and yes, what age were you starting to think, I want to do something that matters?
I've always thought that. 13, maybe? 12?
Right. Yeah, young.
You know, yeah.
You ran Centrepoint for 5 years, and famously, of course, had its patron in Diana, Princess of Wales. When did you meet her? Did you meet her on the first day in the
first
job?
First day, yeah. Yeah, day one. I think she'd made some speech about packing in public life. The job was to go on the Today programme and talk about youth homelessness.
Had you done that? Had you been on the Today programme before? No.
No. And then go to St James Palace and persuade Princess Diana not to dump Centrepoint as a patron. And then go into the office and start working on a pretty significant restructuring, because we needed to raise £1 million or something in a couple of months.
And if you didn't raise £1 million, you were going down the tubes, is that?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's quite a day at the office.
Really, I felt the pressure that I had to walk out of that palace with Princess Diana tied to Centrepoint.
Yes.
Because otherwise my start at Centrepoint would have been a little less than confident.
Indeed. And before you left, did she give you an absolute yes, or did she say, I have to think about this?
I knew it was going to be yes when I left, yeah.
How did you know? She said that to you?
No, because we got on. You know, if you've clicked with someone, you know whether you've had a laugh and you've had a meeting of causes and minds. And you have to remember, the job that I took on wasn't about me and it wasn't about Princess Diana. It was about the people who weren't in the room.
Yes. And of course, there is always a degree now and again of scepticism about why people who are bright, shining stars do hook their notoriety to charities. Mm. Why do you think she wanted to do it?
Well, there's a whole range of motivations, aren't there? And I think she gave a damn.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of reasons, but amongst them, and the one that I was bothered about, was that she actually gave a damn about the issue. She cared about young people. I just made her laugh. I think my first words to her, you know, this wonderful living room that I was asked to go into to wait, and she came in, and my opening words were, this is a great room, it's just like my living room, you know. And she thought it was funny.
Let's have some more music then, Victor Adebowale. What's next?
Oh, it's Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair.
And why have you chosen this one?
Well, because I was talking to my sisters about my mum and thinking about this. My mum, one of the first films she ever saw was South Pacific. It's a very interesting musical, actually, because it's about race and mixed race and all that sort of stuff. But it's also about a woman saying, I'm deciding I'm not going to be in a relationship with you, for quite the wrong reasons. I mean, she didn't want to be in a relationship with him because he had mixed race children. And then she realised, after a while, that actually that didn't matter, that it's love. And this is just a song that makes me laugh, actually.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way. Get the picture? I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms. I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms. I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms and send him on his way.
That was Mitzi Gaynor and the Ken Darby Singers, and I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair, from the original soundtrack to South Pacific. So, Victor Adebowale, as we know, you were brought up in Wakefield. You were born in the early 60s. Your parents had come over from Nigeria in 1955.
55,
yeah. What did they want from life in Britain?
The same thing everybody wants, really. You know, they came over to do good things. They were invited over, actually. My dad was a very intelligent man and was certainly the deputy or head teacher in Nigeria at a very early age. And my mum was qualified as a nurse. They weren't coming over here to do the jobs that no one else wanted to do. They were coming here to add value, to progress, to do things.
And how were they treated when they got here?
I think, like most black people that came over in the 50s, what awaited them was fear, really. Fear and horror. Because the population at large was unprepared for what they saw was an invasion. Mm-hmm. And they came to Scotland, the first place they went to.
Yeah, they went to Portobello, which is on the coast just outside Edinburgh.
Yeah, and
I've
been there.
Rather lovely place.
It's a very nice place. And
why did they go there, though? I mean, it's not a typical place that one might choose.
I know, I'm not really. I guess that if there's an Adebowale motto, it would be, don't follow the mob.
Right.
They didn't get the no blacks, no dogs, no Irish in Scotland. When they sat on a park bench, people didn't get up and walk away. People were curious.
Right.
My dad could have made his first million, first footing on New Year's Eve.
Of course, tall, dark, handsome stranger.
Yeah, there you go.
As long as he had the black bun, he would have
That's
been
right.
fine. So when they went to Wakefield then?
I don't think people really appreciate it. When I've read and talked to not just my mother, but black people who came to England at that time, it was deeply racist. I mean, they were considered to be less than human. My mother had to do all her exams again, even though she was perfectly well qualified as a nurse in Nigeria. And then my dad, who came over to do medicine, realised that actually, you know, if he called Adebowale, getting into medical school might have been a bit of a challenge. I mean, he could have done it in Nigeria, but they had better medical schools over here.
So what did your dad do? What was his job?
He did all sorts of jobs while trying to get into medical school. He was a thwarted man.
Was he? Right. And did they ever think about going back to Nigeria?
No, because they couldn't afford to. I mean, look, people arrived and became poor. The ladder was climbed by very few.
Did your parents talk to you about that, Ben? Did they say, when you go to school and somebody says, whatever they might say, this is what you say back? Or did they...
No, I mean, both my parents had expectations of us.
Because you were one of four?
Yeah, to do our best to not give in to other people's expectations. We had inculcated in us, thank God, a sense of pride and equality. We were poor, but we never went to school scruffy or mm-hmm. dirty. We were taught to respect others. We were taught that if someone's pushing you, the thing to do is to take one small step backwards.
That's interesting.
And to be intelligent in your relationship with others.
Yes.
We were taught dignity.
And just a little bit more on your mum and dad. They were young, educated, optimistic people with ambitions and hopes for themselves, not just for their kids.
Yeah.
How did they deal with the disappointment?
I think my dad suffered. He died recently, and so he died a thwarted man. But it is possible to work hard, very hard, to be intelligent, to have all the attributes that should get you to the top and be thwarted by the prejudice of others. It's not just about race. It's, I mean, women, people with disabilities. Yeah. That's how isms work.
Yes. Hugely frustrating and a weight to bear through your entire life. Did he talk to you about it?
No. I understood it. I understand it now. And I've forgiven him for the things that he did because of it.
We're going to have a bit more music then, Victor. What's next and why?
Oh, it's Nimrod, Elgar's Enigma Variations. My dad used to get these boxes of records. We used to listen to a load of stuff and it was really difficult to pick. But we had these classical box sets and he used to play Tchaikovsky and Elgar. And I remember hearing this. This reminds me of him. There's some pain in there and there's struggle in there and there's strive and there's just something that reminds me of him.
That was Nimrod from Elgar's Enigma Variations, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir Charles Mackerras. You seemed somewhere else during that, Victor Adebowale. Are you back with us now?
Yeah, I am.
Right.
I am. Yes.
A moment ago you said we were poor, and quite often when people talk about that when they're youngsters, they say, we were poor. Now that I look back on it, at the time I didn't really know. Was it something that you understood at the time?
I don't think so, actually. When I look back on it, there were a lot of things we didn't have. I mean, holidays, central eating, all that kind of stuff that we just didn't have. But poverty of circumstance did not preclude poverty of discourse and reading and engagement and stuff. So we weren't poverty-stricken intellectually or aspirationally or emotionally, but we were poor.
You said once, if you want to know human nature, be a street sweeper. If you want to really understand what people are when they are not observed, be a street sweeper. When you were a street sweeper, what did you learn about human nature?
I learned that actually cruelty can be very casual. Observing people is best done from the point where they don't notice you.
Yes.
So I kind of, you do get to see how people behave around each other and what they do when they think no one's looking and how they treat people who they think are inconsequential.
You were head boy. How does head boy end up working for Wakefield Refuse Department? What happens?
Nothing happened. It's just I don't learn by rote. And for a while I thought that meant you must be stupid. It doesn't actually. I've got a fairly good memory, but I'm not. I go off piste. It was like a switch. You know, I couldn't do something just because I was told to do it.
So your A-level results were not what they could have been, and you had to get a job.
I had a girlfriend as well, which I guess, you know, a bit of a distraction.
Oh, was that it? Was that really it?
Partly it, yeah, certainly. It was and, it always was. Because my O-levels were the same, you know. But I passed enough O-levels to do A-levels, you know, and I did all right.
I mean, you went back and got your A-levels and shaped up and went, and we'll talk about your further education in a moment, but you're a father of two kids yourself then. I mean, what do you tell them about what to expect from life?
No, I mean, with Adam, who's working really hard on his GCSEs, aren't you, son? I mean, what I say to him is, look, you're only... it's an expectation. The only thing that I expect for him to do is hopefully stand on my shoulders and just reach that little bit higher. But look down, because he is privileged, you know, as is my very cute daughter, and it's really important that they understand that. But I'd like him to use his intellect and his privileges to be happy. Do not pursue power, because it will kill your humanity.
A message to us all. Yeah. Right, let's have some more music then. What are we going to hear?
Well, I mean, you've got to have The Stranglers, haven't you? Peaches. It was an outrageous song at the time, and now it's played on radio too. So, and I just think it's a great song.
Strolling along, minding my own business. Well, there goes a girl and a half. She's got me going up and down. She's got me going up and down. Walking on the beaches, looking at the peaches. That you got some suntan lotion in that bottle of yours.
That was The Stranglers and Peaches. So, Victor Adebowale, you left Wakefield to study in London. Did that moment seem like the world was really opening up? You know, a huge cosmopolitan city.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was great, actually. It was saying goodbye to my mum and getting on the train. It was the only train journey I took, actually, because the rest of the time it was coaches from then on.
Had you been to London before?
I had been to London on a school trip, which was a pretty scary school trip, because I got thrown up against a wall by some coppers that were looking for somebody who had stolen somebody's handbag outside the Natural History Museum. The thing that saved me was my Yorkshire accent. It's not him, Gov. Sort of dropped me, jumped in the car and drove off. It's like an episode out of Sweeney.
I don't want to draw too many obvious conclusions, but was that about the colour of your skin? It was, here's a black guy in amongst loads of white people.
I think it probably was, yeah. Yeah, I think it was. It was just like, I think maybe somebody had given a description of a, you know, black or dark-skinned or whatever, and they just thought, that's him. I mean, that was a really frightening, actually. It was frightening. You know you've got over something when you can laugh at it, but it was crazy, yeah.
And what about being a black person in a very prominent role? I mean, you know, the idea of standing out.
Yeah.
You still will, even in Britain today. People will remember you, but they will also, I'm imagining, it attracts negative attention at times.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, and it will do, and it will do for the rest of my life. There's only been one occasion when I've had hate mail, and that was at Centrepoint after Princess Diana died, and I was on the television a lot because we decided that's what the strategy was going to be, to get Centrepoint's issues out there. Yeah, we did get some hate mail, which the police took seriously, and it was a bit scary. And I'm very conscious of, well, not very, but I'm aware that there are people out there who are terrorists. I mean, they're racial terrorists. They are fueled by hate.
Working that out, your family would have been very young then, and certainly maybe your daughter wouldn't even have been born, of course, but your son would have been very... That must have been terrifying.
It wasn't very pleasant, but I kept it to myself. I mean, it's no point in frightening others. Racism's very subtle, and I know because I've spoken to women and others about this, where, you know, highly competent people say or do something, and it's ignored until the white person or the male says exactly the same thing, and then that person's given the credit for it. And that happens all the time.
Have you ever wanted to get up and walk out in such circumstances?
I have got up and walked out. I'm perfectly polite and reasonable and rational, but I just don't see the need to be there because I'm not adding any value. If you're not adding any value in that forum, then you work out a way to add value in another.
But you have been, you know, invited in to sit round, not obviously not the cabinet table at Downing Street.
Actually,
but
we have, actually.
Have you?
Cabinet
nice.
Table. Yeah, the launch of the big society, indeed. Yeah.
Right. Time well spent.
Therein lies a tale.
Go on then, tell us the tale.
It's time well spent as long as you don't confuse access with influence.
Right. The fact that you're getting in the door doesn't mean
yeah,
they're listening.
No, no.
Yeah.
And but one should try and influence. And I hope I have influenced for the good or the interest of the people who aren't in the room. That's the point of it, you know, and it's time well spent if you can leave that little influence bomb in there or that little idea.
Let's have some more music then.
Right, LTJ Buckham, because it's just great stuff, and you shouldn't say this, but me and my son both like this kind of stuff, and it is good.
Minds been captive and reactive, from the lyrics of right, stoking the fires of light, holding the mic, with pressure on your tempo, while WTBH is rocking instrumental, so why not give it all that I got? My vocal center, it becomes imperative for you to talk and take it time, and we ain't got that flowing on tap. Lyrical miracle world is under attack, so get your mind, a million brain cells, fat stack with the information that is releasing the force known as logical, mythical, magical.
That was LTJ Buchan featuring Words to be Heard with vocals by MC Conrad and Conquest. So, Victor Adebowale, the question of leadership, when did you find that you could open your mouth in a room, sound authoritative and carry people with you on sometimes difficult journeys?
It must have been about two. No, I'm only joking.
I wish that were true.
I guess I realised, I mean, probably in the late 80s, I was doing a lot of work around housing for Newham Council, and as a housing officer, what you realised on a lot of the estates was that people were suffering from multiple problems, poverty being the sort of base one, but, you know, it was also mental health, substance misuse, relationships. I mean, the number of women that I worked with in Newham who had multiple abusive relationships with men who would beat them up and then had to be moved because of it. You just get to understand that it's more complicated than at first thought.
For the last 10 years, you've run an organisation called Turning Point, and that helps people with mental health issues, drug and alcohol yep. abuse problems.
And learning disabilities.
Right, so people who are sort of at the bottom of our pile, as it were.
Well, I know it sounds odd, but I find it very difficult when people use words like bottom of pile and disadvantaged. I know why they say it, but you know what? They're just people.
Yes.
You know, you'd be amazed, the veneer that separates people who don't think they're at the bottom of the pile from
yes.
people who are is quite thin, actually.
Yes, it's that moment of ill fortune, a moment when a marriage breaks
really,
down or a job is lost.
Yeah,
or,
yes. And I've seen it so many times, so they're just people.
Can you think of a particular example of a great success story? Can you think of somebody you met, somebody your organisation...
Oh, God, I can think of loads of people.
Pick one, then. Give me a quick example.
Well, I won't use a name, but I can think of someone who had arrived. I mean, if you saw this guy, he was... Basically, you would have said he was a tramp, he stank, he'd been on the streets for years, in terrible state. Actually, it turned out that he'd walked out of a fairly middle-class family and had started drinking quite early on in his life. Most people would have walked away from him, and within, I think it was about 18 months, 2 years, he was back studying to be a barrister. 2 weeks ago, I was in one of our learning disability services, where a young man who had learning disabilities and had depression and alcohol had lived on his own for years in a house that was falling apart to the point where he'd got a superating sore on his foot and he was going to be sectioned for his own good because they were going to cut his foot off. And we got him into one of our services and started working with him on his drinking, and he gave him a structure around his day, worked with him, He's got 2 feet. He lives in a house that he's able to manage on his own. We cleaned up his flat. You know, I can go. There's loads of them. Loads of stories like that.
I'm wondering if, do you ever get ground down by the reality of constantly dealing with the difficulties that people?
Oh, no, no, hell no. It is a privilege. When somebody asks for help, it's a privilege to be able to sit alongside someone's life and see them succeed or not, or come round again. People spend their whole lives trying to get power over others, and people come to us and they hand us power to change their lives, to turn their lives around. And when you see people who have come in crawling and walk out with their head high, it's a privilege. I don't get ground down by what I do. No. This is a good thing.
Let's have some music, Victor Adebowale. We're on disc 6.
Ooh, crikey. The Tourists.
Yeah.
I Only Want to Be With You, because this was Annie Lennox, who I saw at Unity Hall. It's one of those songs that I just always like to hear. But when I got married to T, who she was going to marry me, when we were getting married, after the ceremony, we had this song playing, and as we both heard it, and we both looked at each other, we started dancing spontaneously down the aisle, and people were clapping. It was one of those moments, you know, when you're happy and it all comes together, and then something, you react internally to happiness, and you just start dancing, and we just had a great day.
That was The Tourists, and I Only Want to Be With You, and happy memories of your wedding day, Victor Adebowale, and dancing down the aisle with your new bride. You've said in the past, I was never really interested in making money. I wanted to do something that made a valuable contribution to society. And yet, it's true, isn't it, that big charities, big posts in local authorities, they have to pay the big money to attract
Absolutely.
The people who are able to do the job. I mean, I think the job that you're in had a salary of £85,000, and that is quite a lot of money, actually.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Does that sit comfortably with you?
Oh, yeah, because I earned every penny, I still do. I run a business that works with, 160,000 people a year. We employ 2,500 people. I don't get paid as much as the Prime Minister, but then, you know, I don't have a free house in the country and a free residence in central London and free transport either. So, you know, if I ran a bank and I was being paid £20-odd million pounds a year, nobody would bat an eyelid, even though I've brought the country to its knees. I happen to run an organisation. I don't think there's a problem with paying people to run complicated organisations.
I read you somewhere described as a social entrepreneur. That sounds very thrusting. Do you feel like a social entrepreneur?
No, I mean, I've described a lot of things. And I run a business. We don't do fundraising at Turning Point. We are a social enterprise in the sense that we have to make a profit. Every year, that profit goes back into designing new services and creating new businesses. That's a business.
You don't fundraise. Is that because it
No.
would be too difficult to raise funds for something which is spectacularly unglamorous
Yeah.
and complex, as you've described it?
It is difficult. If somebody knocked on your door and said, you know, support your local neighbourhood semi-secure unit, you wouldn't be reaching for your purse, would you? And so we don't fundraise simply because we found a more efficient business model, which is to actually contract with health and local authorities and others to provide an excellent service at a good price. It works.
What about the advice you give? You've been called on in the past to give advice to Labour and also the Liberals and Conservatives in their coalition. We know you do sit around the table, the cabinet table, and you see the almost all-male white front bench with one or two exceptions, Oxbridge educated, Eton in their suits, upper middle class as they are right now. Do you despair about whether or not they can connect to the reality of the people at the who are taking the services that you provide?
Well, I don't despair, because I never despair. I just hope that they can understand, because it's not about being romantic about poverty or even applying some political theories, however bizarre. It's about understanding. And if you're not prepared to do that, then people suffer. You know, millions of people suffer.
Let's have some music then, Victor.
The Cocteau Twins. I heard them on John Peel. They blew my mind. I've got everything they've ever got. Some people think they're rather weird. I think they're fantastic. I think it's poetry and music.
That was the Cocteau Twins and Pearly Dewdrops Drops. Victor Adebowale, you are a big character. I'm guessing you need to be quite a big character to lead organisations. Do you think you're easy to live with?
I don't think... I mean, I've spent a lot of time thinking about leadership, and it's not about character, it's about state of mind. And actually, there are people who lead much bigger organisations than Turning Point who are... small, quiet people who influence in very different ways. So I think it's easy to imagine me, because I'm a 6-foot black guy with dreadlocks, being sort of... and I can be when necessary, but it's very rare that I need to, you know, direct. You shouldn't have to direct. Leadership is about what happens when you're not in the room, not when you're there.
And at home, then? What are you...
You need to talk to my good lady wife and kids. I think I'm an absolute angel to live with, to be honest. The things I put up with, crikey, jumping on me bed and, oh dear.
Yeah.
It's terrible in our house.
Yeah. How old is your youngest?
She's 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So lots of jumping on the bed.
Yeah.
When you refer to your mother, and especially when we were talking about the House of Lords, she must surely have taken a moment to say to you, son, well done.
You know what? She didn't. And she didn't have to. We just don't have that kind of relationship, I guess. She's not aspirational in that kind of, you know, that's my boy kind of way. And I'm really glad about that. She was much more chilled than that. I'd like to think she's proud of me, and I know that I haven't let her down. And I don't think any of my brothers and sisters have let her down. We've done all right, you know. And as I say, you know, Adebowale's wobble, but we don't fall down. You know, we've done all right. And she did all right by us. And we're just paying our respects.
Would you have a wobble on the island, all on your own, nobody to talk to?
Oh, sounds great. I'm actually quite resourceful.
Right.
So I think I'm quite resourceful and quite self-directed. Once I set a goal, I'm pretty focused on it. So if I wanted to get off the island, I'm pretty certain I'd get off it. The holiday would be nice. You know, a couple of weeks. That'd be quite cool.
Time for your final piece of music then, Victor. What are we going to hear?
Well, I've always liked a bit of jazz, and Ben Webster and Coleman Hawkins have been with me for, well, pretty much all my musical life. So I've got to have some Ben Webster and Coleman Hawkins. It never entered my mind.
That was Ben Webster and Coleman Hawkins, and it never entered my mind. So, Victor, here you go, the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you can take a book of your own to accompany them. What's it going to be?
It'd have to be the complete works of Wallace Ainca.
Yes.
Because I'm getting into him, and he'd be a great read, and he's got a lot to say.
You can have that. Ooh. Okay. And a luxury, too.
Helicopter?
Absolutely not. I can't even believe you thought you'd get that one past me.
Well, I mean, you know, no instructions. I can't fly one. I'd have to learn, wouldn't I?
Right. No.
I'd take my saxophone.
Ah.
Yeah, because I'd have plenty of time to practice, and I'd use it for something.
Okay. It's yours. And if you had to take just one disc from the 8, which one disc would you save?
Oh, crikey. Well, I'd take the Ben Webster and Coleman Hawkins.
Okay.
Why not?
Victor Adebowale, Baron Adebowale of Thorns in West Yorkshire, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you, it's been a gas.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.